Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. It's your girl, Monique Leray, for another startup. Happy Sunday, and I hope you're doing really well today. We've got a very powerful show. As you guys know, I have my hands in a lot of different things, and that includes documentary filmmaking. I have with me today, and it's a privilege to have him, Jacqueline Sawyer's uncle, James Rideout, from the Puyallup Tribe of Indians in Tacoma, Washington. And he's also a council member, a tribal council member there, who's up for re-election. Mr. Rideout, thank you for being here. How are you today?
I'm doing good. It's really nice to reach out to the, you know, LA people. Yeah. Doing great.
I'm glad to hear it, and you have actually been on the show. You were on there with some of my associates, Mark and Matthew Harris. We first had you on, I believe it was last year, and you introduced the LA area to Jacqueline Sawyer's story. And I think that it's really important to revisit everything at this moment in time with everything that's going on with the justice movement.
Yeah, well, let me get a chance to refresh everyone's memory, if they don't remember when I was down there before. On January 28th of 2016, my niece was executed by law enforcement. And, when I had found out that it was her that was killed, you know, I had went over to the scene because I didn't want my sister to witness that. You know, and when I got to the scene, you know, that the law enforcement had told me, you know, in Como 4 News that this is going to be justified. And at that time, I didn't quite understand it. They had the scene completely blocked off. And I was just really frustrated because, we have never been through something like this before. She's the first tribal member in the Puyallup Tribe of Indians to have been shot and killed by excessive use of force and police brutality.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to get through the confusion and figure out answers, what happened, why did this happen? You know, and come to find out they were serving a search warrant on her boyfriend, her companion, an African-American companion. And, you know, they had killed her and he had got away supposedly with a rifle and, you know, something of that nature. So I didn't believe it. You know, I didn't want to believe it. We don't want to believe it because I know my niece, Jackie. I've known her since birth, raised on the Puyallup Indian Reservation. And so I just knew she wasn't the type to do something like that. And so they kind of kept us all out of the process. And I went down to our tribal law enforcement to ask them because we have a joint jurisdiction with other tribes in the cities. You know, we live under two governments, the state of Washington plus the federal government of the tribes. And because we're supposed to have joint jurisdiction and there was no part of the investigation from our tribe. So I became even more upset. Why aren't we a part of this investigation of my family? And, you know, and so as time went on, you know, I was like, you know, what do we do, you know, about this? And, you know, when law enforcement kills your loved one, when they take your life, and then, you know, the people that are supposed to serve and protect you are the ones that are now, you know, controlling the whole narrative, including, you know, their own investigation, their own independent investigation. Well, that morning, some of the kids from our school, and I was at our school with my daughter, text me in pictures and photos. They said, oh my gosh, they took this girl and they threw her out on the street and they put a tarp over her. And that was my niece, Jackie, you know. And so, you know, when I found out that, you know, they had removed her from the scene and they took her out of the car and they put her in another car and then they threw her back out of the car like garbage, you know. I was like, just so pissed off. But once again, what do you do? Who do you turn to? There's no one to turn to when you're a victim of police brutality and excessive use of force, and they execute you. So it was really, took a couple of days to gather ourselves and prepare for the, you know, funeral of my niece, Jackie. And so when she came, you know, the coroners, you know, released her within a short period of time, which I thought was unorthodox. You know, and if I would have known what I know now, I would have did a second autopsy, you know, to find out. Yes. Because we're, you know, you're under trauma. You just, you know, you want to take care of your loved ones, you know, because we have a traditional way of life, you know, and we have traditional way of burial, you know. And so we prepared for her funeral. And to make things worse, we get the death certificate and it says she's pregnant. And that just devastated my sister.
Heartbreaking.
Yes.
That's, you know, with all those things, all those factors kind of compounding and adding up, it's I think it's important for the viewers and the listeners to understand exactly why not only is this wrong on every level for every other day, everyday person, but because you are Native American and you have a pact with this country, can you just give people a little bit of essence on what that means exactly and why you guys are a little bit more protected at the moment?
Well, we're not particularly protected. We had to create protection. I mean, when we had figured out solutions to do something about this, immediately victims of Washington State came to my sister and they said, hey, you know, this happened to us. And all of a sudden people started coming from Olympia, Seattle, all different areas of victims. And, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do about this as well. And so we organized is what we did. And we had a great organizer from a coalition of Black trade unionists that came in, and Loretta Zaks. And she came in and she helped us organize. She said, we're going to go to the city council's offices. We're going to organize a march or rally. And we're going to go down to, you know, ask them, you know, for definitive information of, you know, where we're at in this investigation. We want something done about it. Well, lo and behold, the city didn't do anything. So we took our federal responsibility and went down to the federal building because they have a federal and a fiduciary responsibility to our tribal governments, you know, for federal oversight. And they didn't do an independent investigation. So there was no independent investigations done at that time. But the people that have victims of Washington State were already working on an initiative process to change the law and excessive use of force. And why I say that is because every action that they do in law enforcement, if it's worded in their laws, it protects them from any actions they may do to citizens for anything that they do. So it's basically immunity. They had immunity. And it's called malice. It was called malice in the state of Washington. And so the initiative we wrote, Initiative I-940, was to remove malice and redefine good faith with better police training. And, you know, hold on a second.
Oh,
okay.
I lost you.
Yeah, you're okay. You're okay. Hold on.
We lost James. He'll be right back. For everybody that's tuning in, I just want you to know we're on with James Rideout from the Puyallup Tribe of Indians in Tacoma, Washington, and we're discussing justice for Jackie. And de-escalation, and we're live on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah. That's the problem. That's the problem with the live feed. If somebody calls in, well, you know, that kind of happens on social media.
You gotta turn that thing off. Put that on. Do not disturb, James. Let's catch everybody up. You were able to mobilize and organize with CBTU, and that's the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And you were able to come up with a bill, 940, and it was hashtag de-escalate Washington. That bill became law in the fall of 2018. The people of Washington State answered your family's cry and passed it and turned it into law. And the last 24 months, you've been putting it into practicality and into legislation, right?
Yeah, it's implemented, but they're still not following the law here in 2020 in Washington State. You know, they're not using guns anymore. They're actually just choking people out like George Floyd. We have an Ellis family here that was killed here in March 3rd of this year under the law, the new law of Initiative I-940. And so, you know, I came together with the Ellis family and we are able to get independent investigations today. And so the governor and the attorney general are also stepping in to, you know, look at police reform and carry it to even to another level of excessive use of force. And that's really because no police force are monitored for what they do. They can go off and, you know, have a record of killing people and nobody evaluates. There's no tracking system for them. That's just one of the things they're going to do is make sure there's a tracking system and they're held accountable. As you see across the United States, And I'm so grateful, and not at the expense of loved ones, but I'm grateful that there's so many people involved today in something that we had no media outlet, we had no support, and we were able to garner 62% of Washington State's voters to change the law initially. So we paved the way, because it's never been done in the history of the United States. Has any law ever been changed in any state? It's very precedent setting. So once you set that precedence, you know, the other states follow suit, which California was the second state to follow suit in excessive use of force and police brutality. You know.
Yes. And I think that it's really important to get Jackie's story out there and your family and your tribe's story out there, that you guys did lay the groundwork together with CBTU and paved the way. And like you said, we want it to be all 50 states and territories and worldwide as well. And you guys have, you know, the skeleton in and the plan, you know, the blueprint for this. When you see that these laws are not being upheld, what do we do to fix that? What is your proposal? Does there need to be an amendment for action?
Yeah, they're actually got a task force that they're putting together with the governor today that will reevaluate the law initiative I-940. And they're going to go in and revise and even put in more implementation on top of what we do. So when legislation starts after this pandemic, you know, we'll be able to even go even further than what we did by removing malice and redefining good faith and getting see, officers only, you have to have more training to be a hairdresser than you do a police officer. Can you believe that? It's incredibly insane. But they don't vet their officers amongst themselves. And I personally think because of George Floyd, that they're self-evaluating themselves internally amongst their police unions. The problem is the unions. The unions are the ones that are really causing the issues, because they've been able to do whatever they want, however they want, for forever. And so people have had enough. And we've all had enough. You know, if you're not a victim, and it doesn't impact you at your home, and it doesn't come to your doorstep, you don't understand. And we don't want you to understand. There's no doubt about that. We don't want you to know how this feels. You know,
right.
And I'll give you some stats. In 2016, when Jackie was killed, there were 60 people on an average a year that were killed by in Washington State with excessive use of force and by the hands of a gun of a police officer. And it never goes on the media. It never goes live. You know, it never gets, you know, it wrote about, they talk about the victims, they try to make them out to be, you know, a drug addict or something. They change the narratives, you know, but it really takes away from the essence. And so really, you'll never get any justice under the old current law. And we still don't till today, right? We're still working on it. What is justice? Ask yourself, what is that, right? In reality, your loved one will never come back. They will never come home. But if you can preserve somebody's life, which in, I'll go back to 2016, there were 60 people on average. When we changed the law in 18, there was only 36 people that lost their lives in Washington State. That's a great start. That's a great start. And as you know, that's 25 plus people that have preservation of life. And so it turns in, for the sake of Jackie, you know, we're going to save lives in our state. But it wasn't because of just Jackie though. It's because of Andre Taylor and Andre, you know, all the people of Washington, Noel Parrish, her husband was killed, you know, Andre and Bryson, Chaplin, you know, shot by the police just by stealing beer as a young African-American child. And as they're running through the woods, they gunned them down in the middle of the woods, you know, and then they were prosecuted for abusing a police officer, being shot in the back, five multiple shots, and paralyzed for life. One of the brothers, the other one jumped on top of his brother so he didn't kill him on the sixth shot, you know. And I mean, these things have been happening for forever, but like I said, the people have had enough. We organized the Latino community, we organized, you know, Centro de la Raza, we organized the African communities and the Native communities and the ACLU and a bunch of different church organizations. We worked for years to change this law, and it took a lot of people coming together, you know, to make these things happen, you know. But what I see today, I was in Seattle, you know, on Juneteenth. And what I seen through, you know, today's is the whole world's galvanized, and it's youth. The youth are the answer. They're the ones that are going to make the difference. Because I told every youth I came about, you don't realize how much I'm so grateful that you are here today.
Yeah.
And you care. You care. You have a systemic racism going on in white population. And there was more white population that come to the Juneteenth than African Americans that were out on the streets. And that was a beautiful thing.
Well, you make a great point, James. I think it's important that, you know, the old school, if you will, understand if they're going to continue in their illegal and racist ways, that the new generations that we've been bringing up have someone of color that they love, Native Americans, Latins, Blacks, Jewish, Italians, we're all intertwined. And, you know, it's going to be very hard to find someone that you don't care about that's a person of color or a woman or an older, you know, person. These are all civil rights that in 1964 were afforded to all of us. And someone in their lives is benefiting from civil rights and asking for justice for Jackie, asking for justice for George Floyd, asking for justice for Andre and Bryson are all extensions of that. But I think people kind of forget that civil rights is embedded in the fabric of their life. And I wonder why they forget that.
Mm. Well, we all been through our struggles, you know, African-American, Native American communities, you know, and they respect the fact in Washington State that they want the tribes, especially my family, to lead the fight of justice. When you come, they respect us and want us to open up because it's our homeland. It's our ancestral homeland. They acknowledge that we were the first, you know, people of coming here. And then the African-Americans had built society for society. You know, we all been through the struggle together. You know, once again, coming together with humanity, then you see the the white people, I should say, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, them coming to the forum, you know, going, hey, mom, that ain't right. Grandpa, yeah. That's not right. That is not okay. Yeah. You may think it's okay, but I have my right to my opinion and it's not okay. And what I tell these kids, and I can't wait to go talk to many colleges around Washington and tell them, look, you are the answer. Do not forget this moment in time. This is very critical. Because when I had met the African-American communities from CBTU, their head leader, Dr. Lucy, had told me, he said, son, you're emotionally all over the place. Focus. Focus on one thing. I was telling him about all these multiple killings in Washington State. He said, what did you come here for? He said, I came here for Jackie. That's the narrative that you stick to. It'll take care of everything. And so, you know, they gave me the wisdom and, you know, the courage and the strength. When you have to be your own investigator. Investigate your own crime scenes, you know, come up with solutions, alternatives, you know, the city mayors, the city councils, even the Governor Inslee of Washington State told me this is most likely not going to happen. Wow. I said, oh, okay. Year after year of pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. Guess what, Mr. Inslee? I've got about 365,000 people as signatures in Washington State. This is, well, you've got to make a decision. You know, the unions are the people, you know, the people.
You know, and congratulations, because that is groundbreaking and it is historical. And I think that, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting you right when you, this was all going down. And, you know, you and I met in a smoky lounge in Vegas. I always tell people, you know, serendipitous moments. And I'm so grateful because learning about Jacqueline Sawyer's story and your family's quest for her justice and for everybody's justice, justice for Jackie is justice for all, has really changed a lot of things for me in my life. And let's be clear about what the ask is here. It's de-escalation, it's police reform, police training. Can you give people examples, tangible examples of what that looks like?
Can you repeat that? Sorry, my screen went dead of my daughter.
It's okay. Yeah. Police reform and de-escalation, defunding. People get confused with that word defunding. But can you give us practical, examples of what de-escalation
is like? Yeah, well, you know, people are starving for more outlet in their communities. There's programs or organizations, all those types of things. Defunding, me personally don't think it's the exact right word. You know, if we're taking and we're going to revitalize the unions and how they structure their police unions and what they're using money for, you know, that's different. You know, like I said, beginning to, you know, find a tracking system who actually violates. There's no violation for the violator, right? Even if the law has changed, there's no violation for a violator. You know, they're not held to a standard. They need to be held to a higher standard. You know, so we're in the early stages of, you know, in the police reform at this time. And so I'm sure we're going to have many minds come together from all Caucasians. We re-meet. It's like, even though you changed a law, we've got work to do to change the whole structure of the system from start to finish. You know, and a lot of it in the police reform is changing how they police and how they monitor. But they also got to have programs, you know, where they're interacting with their communities. You've got, you know, young police officers that are coming into the system, right? If they live in this community that, you know, we live in here, they would basically go, okay, hi, George, how you doing today? Hi, Paul. You know, how's nephew doing? You know what I mean? They have the chance to direct and change people's lives, but they choose not to do so, you know, because...
That's in the game. Yeah.
Exactly. But they do also, and I'm not going to discredit all police, and this is where I say that they're actually internally, you know, evaluating themselves. Hey, look there, buddy, I'm not supporting you no more with your actions. They're turning internally. They're at the lowest self-esteem they've ever seen in the United States of America. Well, guess what? We didn't do it. You know, we're just tired of it. Enough is enough. That's not, this thing can't happen. We're not going to be, you know, policed and community policing this way. And so you need to change the community policing. And this is what I told, because it took me years to get to this part of where I'm at today in the sake of justice. But, you know, I told the Tacoma Police Department, the killers that killed my niece, the mayor in the city of Tacoma, and, you know, and said, look, this is not going to change everything from this meeting inside this room. The change is out in our communities, you know, and then I was willing to, you know, go out in the communities and put everything set aside, build this bridge, because we want to build bridges with law enforcement. The community has to play a part as well as law enforcement. But if law enforcement doesn't play a part, community has their hand down, they don't take it, there's nothing we can do, you know. And in the Ellis case here on the third, they choked him out just like George Floyd. And there's a Ring camera on the front porch that actually caught everything. You know, they went from using the gun to using a method. So they're probably, you know, remove all the chokeholds and legislation this year and, you know, all those types of things that are excessive. You know, they're going to reevaluate, you know, how their internal controls are. Because even the internal controls, who evaluates the internal controls, right? Another officer, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah. And, you know, you make a good point about the infrastructure of it all. And I think perhaps the conversation could include, and it probably does already, why you want to be a police officer. We need to start from what? What is your background? What is your motivation? Do you really want to help people, or are you trying to punish people? What is your motive? And I think your why is a big question in how we can filter out. Just like with pilots, just like with doctors, you know, there's a Hippocratic Oath there. Perhaps there needs to be a revisitation on your why, and we need to be a little bit more discriminatory on how we choose people who police us. And, you know, psych evaluations, and making sure that they have time off with their loved ones and that they're okay and healthy in their lives probably helps the outcome, you know, in their work performance. So it seems like there's a bigger discussion, and I'm loving that you're here. Why don't you take a moment and plug how people can contact you if they want to donate, if they want to team up and help, if they want to support Justice for Jackie and what you guys are working towards. How can people find you?
Yeah, primarily on Facebook. You know, that's how we got the law changed, Justice for Jackie on Facebook. And, you know, we stuck to, you know, that page that's been growing and growing and growing, which we didn't want people to grow. But you can reach us on Justice for Jackie for Facebook, you know, primarily. Or you can reach me, you know, on my personal Facebook, James Rideout, Rideout. And just message me, you know.
Great.
I'm a pretty busy guy at this time, but, you know, that's okay.
You're very busy, and I can relate. Now, do you want to give out an email? Do you have an email that if people want to send you something or touch
base? Yeah, it's sure. James Rideout, Rideout, all one word, @gmail.com. Yeah, once again, James Rideout, 99 @gmail.com. See, what we want to do, and I believe in fate, right? I believe in fate. I believe my niece introduced me to you. You know, that was organic. That was so natural. You know, in a sense, and I'm hurting internally, you know, I'm crying inside, you know, figuring out, you know, what I can do for my family, you know, to heal. And then I talk to you and you say, oh, you're producer. And I said, oh, really? You know, that's interesting. But most Native Americans don't, you know, it's not a sellable market. And so I said, you know, what do you do? And this is what I'm doing. And I started telling you the story, you know, and your compassion, you know, is something that, you know, it's got this law change, my compassion, my family's compassion, the compassion, you know, for the sake of loved ones, got this law change. And so fate met each other that day, you know, fate met each other. And all I want to do is tell your story. And now you see, you know, on every news channel for 30 days, they're telling their stories, aren't they? They're telling their stories.
And the word on the curve is justice is de-escalate. And you and I had a quick, brief conversation after George Floyd, and I said, okay, I'm on it. Because we needed to show exactly behind the scenes who has been laying the foundation, and it's you and your tribe and the state of Washington's compassionate members who voted yes on 940. So de-escalate is the hashtag. And police reform and police training. And just to be clear, you're not looking to take away the police department. We're looking to improve upon it. And we want them to have to get less phone calls. If it could be prevented with other things in the community to help them, they don't need to be the answer to everything. And I think that's the message people have to understand. Yeah. We don't want them to have to answer everything because they're not trained in everything in society.
Dr. Lewis told me, he said, son, you know where change comes from? I said, no, sir. You know, I'm listening. He said, son, change comes from decision-making at tables. You know, and I tell the kids, the youth out there, this is why I tell you, do not forget this moment in time, because you all will be decision-makers in every aspect of this policing and police reform, all the way across to being a prosecutor to, you know, a judge. You're all going to be making decisions on this. This is why I'm just crying. You know, in happiness, because I know the change is here in reality. And so it was so hard for me to fight to get, I had to fight under, you know, these circumstances and also get to my own tribal council seat, you know. And to me, I know that, you know, they've been trying to do something about this long before in Washington State, because there are so many victims. If you, from 2005, 60 people on average per year to 2016, do the math. There's a lot of people that are, you know, wanted to do something about this over the period of time, but they just didn't have what we have, a federal government and political capital. You know, we own 25% of, you know, all the land in the United States, you know, and all the natural resources. And so, you know, that pushed it over the top. That's what got it through the legislative process and back to D.C. And, you know, even your guys' Senator, Kamala Harris. You know, I'd spoke to her at one point when she was running for president, you know, and I felt compelled to tell her about my story, because that is important. Tell your story, please. You know, and she wrote me a personal letter. Thank you for all the things that you've done in the sake of police brutality. And that was in 2017.
I would love to see that letter. That's amazing. We have to have a screenshot of that. James, thank you so much for taking time. We're going to continue this conversation. We want people to know that we have done one fundraiser for Justice for Jackie film, and we're in pre-production of the film, and we have some people who have pledged to help and chip in, but we're still continuing donations. You guys can reach out to James Rideout if you want to donate to the film. We will have a GoFundMe page on your page, my page, very soon. Justice for Jackie, you can go on YouTube, Justice the number 4 Jackie, and check out the sizzle reel. You can message James or myself, and if you want to get involved, it is a write-off. It is what is it? What's it called when you can donate and get a write-off?
Tax deductible. It's
The something with the numbers in C. I keep forgetting how to say it. But Justice for Jackie is a write-off, and it's we're going to be in pre-production. Like I said, January we're going to pick that back up. Hopefully, 503C. Thank you, 503C. All right. Thank you, James.
Let me tell you one other thing. This is the template, and this is why we wanted to do this documentary, because this is what people are going through in all the other states. This is the early states of trauma, like we were. We want to pay it forward to all the other states and give them the template that we have, so they can work off what we have, and, you know, and get even farther with having their police reform in all the United States. I just want to share the story with all the whole world. And it is important, because there's hope. There's hope in the world. And we set that precedence that things can be done because, you know, for the people, by the people, we can do whatever we want.
Thank you, James. Justice for Jackie is justice for all. James, right out. Have a beautiful day. And we can't wait to speak with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys. That's James Rideout. You can find him on Facebook, Instagram. You can email him at jamesrideout99@gmail.com. We're going to switch gears today. I now have G. Scott Jack on the line. G. Scott, how are you?
Hello.
Oh, look at that. It's so green outside. Where are you calling us from?
Kansas City, Missouri.
It's beautiful. It's good to see you. It's hot. It's actually summertime. Well, thank you so much for making time to be on the Startup. And
thank you for having me.
Of course. And we're excited to speak with you because, you know, the Startup, we still talk about startups, even though we're in a pandemic and we're dealing with civil rights and things like that, but we are still fostering startups. And you have a really exciting startup. Why don't you share with who you are and your hobby that just turned into a brand?
Okay. Well, first off, I'm Scott Jacks. I'm with Summits Past. And so climbing has been kind of, rock climbing specifically, has been a passion of mine for about 13, 14 years now. Mm-hmm. God, I just did the math. And through the years... Through the years, you know, I've collected ropes. Yeah, we have to retire them because, you know, they can like take so many falls. Like they get stretched, and when you get falls, they get dragged over edges of rock, and you know, just average wear and tear. And they also sometimes just age out. The interior of the core starts to wear down over time. You don't really want to put your life on that. So. With the ropes I've collected through life, like they got a lot of memories in them. Like one of my ropes I took climbing in Thailand, another one I took to Cuba, and you know, throughout the entire United States, I got memories invested in these things. So I decided to start turning my own into rugs, which people liked them and were asking me to make some for them. And I could even actually show you an example of one real quick, if that's okay.
I would love that. Absolutely. Got some,
I brought some small ones to show.
Wow. Oh, how cool.
Yeah. So that's like a real simple one.
So that's actually climbing rope. When you see people hanging off the end of a cliff, that's the actual rope, and you've turned it into a rug or a mat.
This is correct, yes.
Wow.
I got a more complicated one.
Look at that.
So, you know,
that is a really great way to repurpose materials and be good for the environment.
Exactly. My tagline is saving your memories from the landfill. I don't want to see these in a landfill, you know? Like I said, even though they've been used and retired from climbing, that just means you don't want to put your life on them. Which, by the way, if you buy one of these, do not undo it and try to climb it. It's just not a good idea. And
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer, yeah, don't. And so it's still a good material. It's still got life in it. So I want to try something new. Now, recently I've also started, because like the ropes I get from climbing gyms, I've got ropes from climbing gyms all over the country. Like I've just been kind of collecting them specifically to do this, but I realize they're kind of too short to do a nice size rug. Like those two there, those came from a climbing gym. The ropes that would be used for like personal use, like what I would use outdoor and everything, they're a lot longer. And they make a rug about 3 feet in diameter, which is why I don't have one. It just wouldn't fit in the picture. So
they look like they're very durable, and they have to be because they're essentially keeping you alive on the side of a rock.
Exactly. And yeah, and then so with the shorter ropes, I decided to start making dog leashes out of. I think I got one right here. Let's see.
We gotta have a durable dog leash these days.
Right? And you know, I tie these knots.
Wow. Oh, look at that. That's really cool. And what is that silver in the middle? Like the silver part. Okay, that
So yeah, this, I put this thimble in here. That way, you know, because it's got this bolt snap on here that, you know, it's pulling on that rope. You know, these are kind of durable ropes in general, so I wanted to make that last even longer. That right there is going to last you forever, you know?
Wow. That so, is yeah. like a no-joke dog. So what size dog, what's your best client dog-wise, canine-wise for those
you know, leashes? I originally made them for, you know, when I started making these, I'm like, that's a pretty heavy-duty rope. I was envisioning like bigger dogs, but we put one on like a little Chihuahua. He was like this big, and it looked good. He looked good with it, and he kind of was like we were just putting it on him to try. He was like, "All right, cool. Now we're gonna go for a walk." And we just teased him like, "Oh no, that looks good." He's like, "Hey," but we also found that I know some equestrians. And they would love to have some for their horses. And so we went out there and tried them out. Now, sure, this really bolt cool. snap right here, that's a little too dinky for a horse. A horse would easily destroy that. So I do have some bigger, more durable bolt snaps coming to me so I can really utilize these for a horse. Or I was even told some people might want them for cattle, too. So,
wow. So your brand is just growing. And dialogue that we're having, you and I have this off camera, but you know, doing something that you love and then it's not feeling like work, and then look how fast it can grow from rock climbing to a mat. Those mats could be used on the kitchen counter as like a placemat. It doesn't have to just be on the floor. Then you've got dog leashes, horse leashes, and now cow. I mean, what a great way to do all those things. That's cool.
I am looking to expand more because, like you said, they would look great, like on a countertop, or even like I gave one to my aunt and uncle, and they put it like on the headrest of their couch, and it just drapes perfectly. It looks really nice.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So tell everybody what your vision is in the next 12 months for the brand. I know that, you know, people are out trying to get some fresh air, and you're encouraging people to climb and
just get out there.
And just get out there, get some fresh air. But what are your plans for Summit Pat?
I have a lot of plans. I just started my YouTube channel. So that the only thing on there right now is a little tutorial just to show you how versatile these things are. Because you could tie an extra loop into the leash itself, and you know, use it for a traffic leash, so it shortens it and gives you a second loop. And so it shows that, and it also shows, let's see, how you can. So the way this handle, the knot on the handle here, so this is like the front. You can tell by this horizontal loop here. You turn around, there's a back. It has a vertical loop. And so in the video, it shows you how to find that. And so you can clip, like, your, what, duty bag into that?
You've got a YouTube channel launching. What else? Instagram.
We got the Instagram going, which is mostly focused on rugs. I'll be completely honest. I've just started adding leashes here and there. But my Instagram is more based around the rugs and the adventure. Like, I've got a lot of pictures in there of places I've been. A lot, like there's pictures in there from Cuba, Thailand, British Columbia, all over Pacific Northwest, the Southwest, just all of my travels are kind of pictured in the Instagram too, which I have my hashtag, Summits Pass, which reminds me, I would like to get people to start using that hashtag, Summits Pass. Show me, post hashtag pictures of your adventures. Show me where you've been. Tell me the story behind where you've been. And maybe even throw in, like, this is the rope we use, and I love this rope. And, hey, who knows? Maybe I'll pick your stuff. If you want a rug, I'll give you, like, a discount for that.
Nice. I love that. That's a really good way to get people out of their houses and from going crazy and getting out in nature and also trying out your repurposed, environmentally friendly products. So
yeah.
Please support that. Hashtag SummitsPass. And, Scott, I have a question for you, and I think
about 16 years. And not to mention, I've done rigging for like performance artists. There's a local local group of performance artists here in Kansas City, based out of here. I didn't ask them if they could use their name, but I'll go ahead and drop. They're Quixotic, and they're a great group. They're similar to Cirque du Soleil, but you know, in their own way. They bring their own style to it.
I've seen their stuff. It's really, really fascinating. And I think, you know, with that background that you have, I know that you probably saw Bubba Wallace, and I know that the climate in America, we're going through a civil rights, you know, movement, and you saw the piece about Bubba Wallace and the noose that was found in his garage for one of his cars.
Right.
I want your expertise on what exactly a noose is and how often people would need to use that outside of perhaps hanging an animal or a human being. Because you tie all kinds of knots.
Yeah. So there's another name for the noose, and it's the hangman's noose. That's the full name. So there's only one use for that. I mean, trappers use it, and I did look at the picture because technical difficulties. At the picture, and I couldn't believe. I was kind of blown away that got kind of blown off the way it was. So that style of knot would not be the best knot to use for a pull cord because it's a slip knot. So if you were to pull on that, it's designed just to tighten up on whatever's in the noose inside that loop. If you're pulling on it, it's just designed to get tighter. So that's the only reason. So that's something you'd want to use as a pull cord. They might have, and the only person who would do that kind of knot is somebody who knows what that kind of knot is. Now that piece of rope. Now this is just complete conjecture. I don't really know. It's possible that that rope. I mean, to be completely honest, for a pull cord, you don't need a knot at all. You could have just pulled on the rope itself. There's no, just give a little twist and pull. Somebody clearly saw that. If not, put the rope there themselves. Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that someone didn't know what they were doing. Like, that wasn't...
It sounds like it's not a very common slip knot outside of the band Slip Knot. Shout out to Slip Knot. I've never really heard of a reason to use that style. How uncommon or common is it? Because, like I said, you're trying not to save people, to keep people from falling off cliffs.
Can you give me an example.
Yeah,
I'll give you an example. I even have some rope here. I could do some. So with my handles on this, this is a great knot to use for an actual pull cord because this is called a bowline knot. And no matter what, no matter how much pressure you put on that, that's not going to slide in. This is not a slip knot. This is something that's permanent. And then there's the figure eight knot. Again, sorry about that. I got some ropes
here.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe I could tell you the quick story of this rope. This rope's really cool. This one was given to me by a guy who does search and rescue, and this one was actually used to save 3 people out of an avalanche in Washington.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to turning
these
this one.
You guys, whenever you purchase something from Summit Pass, they come with a beautiful story and a fun time.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So the best knot for that scenario would have been what's called a figure eight. What you do is you make a loop, like so. See how that goes?
Yeah.
Just a simple loop.
An eight, yeah.
Come up from behind and go in through the front.
Oh. Now that would be for the garage, to pull the garage door open
If you're trying to get a loop specifically to pull something, this is so easy. A hangman's noose, the one that was used there, that took time to tie. that's not an easy not to do, like something quick. Like this would be the more reasonable thing to do.
How or hard even is it to do a hangman's tie?
It takes practice, that's for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
And you have to like seek it out to learn how to do it, right?
Or yeah. I mean, the only reason I know it is because it was in one of my knot books that I studied for whenever I got into rock climbing. I was trained by a guy who was a paratrooper, high-ranking officer in the paratroopers division of Special Forces. So it was important, and I was a Boy Scout. So it was important to me throughout my entire life. Knots have been a big part of my life.
Interesting. Thank you so much for shedding light on that, because I think it's important for people to know that having a slip knot in a race car's garage before Bubba Wallace was there, it's very abnormal, and it just doesn't make too much sense when you're just trying to close the door.
It's just rude, is what it is.
Yes. And in case you guys don't know, G. Scott Sachs stands with BLM and in solidarity, and his rock climbing, he wants to encourage more people of color to come out and learn how to rock climb.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? You want to say something about that?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know how to get, but every time I'm out and about, so I live in Kansas City, and I'm part of, like, I have some good friends of mine. They actually run an art gallery, and it's all about POC and LGBTQ. And I just try to do everything as possible. And like one thing that I decided to start doing with them is like for my Facebook, for example, social media. Something that I love is like astrophysics. I love learning about space. And so I've just been making sure to put a spotlight out there for the people of color that are in that influence something that I absolutely love. And so, yeah, you look it up.
All right. Well, you know what? Thank you so much for being on. I only have a couple more minutes, so I have to do my shout out. You guys, if you want to find G. Scott Sachs and Summit Pass, and you want to support his startup, you can find him on Instagram at #SummitsPass, @SummitsPass. Give us your email and contact information.
Email is summitspass@gmail.com. I've got my YouTube channel coming. It's Summits Pass. Very simple. I got the Facebook page, Summits Pass. And I also have an Etsy page, Summits Pass. So I kind of lucked out on all of that.
and you did. And your leashes and climbing cords are very affordable. I think your leashes start at like $30 or something like that, right?
They start at $25 because I do have some. I have some that are, the knots are not as ornate.
Okay.
As some, so I have some at 25, and then the highest one I think is 38. Yeah, because there's some other things I want to play around with, some other knots and everything. I just enjoy tying these knots.
Well, hopefully we can keep up with you and your progress. And thank you so much for being on, you guys. I just want to say thank you to everybody that was on today. And listen, be good to each other out there. And if you haven't followed me already on Instagram, it's Monique Laray Stinson, @Monique, LoreStinson, or @Startup with Monique Laray. And I want to shout out my sponsor, Michael Solberg Family Wines. We are officially sponsored by Michael Solberg Family Wines.com. Get your wine delivered today, all 4 varietals of Chardonnay, Rosé, Merlot, and Cabernet. So, like I always ask, what will you start up today? Take care.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Laray, only on LA Talk Radio.